final presentation before the break is Soil Health Management Challenges and Opportunities in the U.S. by Bianca Moebius-Clune, Diane Stott, David Lamb, Wayne Honeycutt. Dr. Moebius-Clune is the new director of the USDA NRCS Soil Health Division. This division was created to incentivize and facilitate producers in implementing science-based, effective, economically viable soil health management systems on the nation's diverse agricultural lands in collaboration with partner agencies and organizations. Bianca came to the agency from the Department of Crop and Soil Sciences at Cornell University, where she served on the faculty as a senior extension associate and lecturer with research and extension responsibilities in soil health assessment and management and in weather-based precision nitrogen management areas. She was a co-author of this Cornell Soil Health Assessment Training Manual that is widely used. And she's conducted research on agricultural management impacts on soil and health, on soil health and nitrogen dynamics in the Northeast and the Midwest, as well in Kenya, and developed a new framework for soil health management planning. I would like to remind those that taking pictures is not allowed for these sessions unless you are a photographer and have permission to do so. So please refrain from photographing. Dr. Moebius-Clune.
Thank you, Ted.
You're quite welcome.
Okay, so thanks. Wow, it's turned into a crowd. That's exciting. So I want to talk a bit about some of the challenges that we're experiencing now across the United States. I'm very grateful for the wonderful introductions of all the speakers that have gone before me, because they've basically laid the groundwork for a lot of what I'm about to talk about. We have significant challenges, and several speakers have alluded to those already. Our population is growing. We need to feed that population. But, at least in the United States, but I think globally, we are taking up a lot of our agricultural land by building on it. That means that we need to grow more on less land. We're also getting increasing extreme events in our weather. As climate is changing, we're getting more flooding, more extreme rainfall. We see situations like this where all that water is what our producers would really want to be using when they need it. But right now, there's too much of it. The river is over its banks. It's wreaking havoc. That means our water quality issues are not being solved right now. We have not had success in improving them across the nation. Basically, EPA's survey shows that, if anything, water quality is getting worse, not better. We need to do something about this. The flip side, when we have not enough water, we get drought scenarios, like this big drought in 2012. Suddenly, folks can't even get their crop up out of the ground or it withers. What can we do about that? We need to adapt to these kinds of extreme events. In some areas of the country, we do have access to irrigation, but for how long? How much? Do we have enough water? Can we make better use of that water? I would argue that a lot of these challenges that we're experiencing across the United States are due to our poor management of soils. We have soil health challenges. I've seen them all across the country. I've seen them in different parts of the world. We get these kinds of soils that are not covered by residue, don't have something actively growing on them, that are being disturbed all the time. And we can see clodding. We can see that we're losing our aggregation. You know, picking up big clods like this in the surface soil, that shouldn't be happening. This right here is an attempt at getting forage established on a land capability class of 1. So if you remember Bruce Knight's talk and that land capability classes, you know, this is one of our prime agricultural soils, and that producer tried 3 times to get a pasture established for his organic dairy when he had just bought that land, thinking he was buying good land. These are the kinds of issues that we're experiencing across the nation right now, and there is an absolute critical need to solve those issues. How is it that we get there? Well, there's basically a downward spiral of soil degradation. This came from Building Soils for Better Crops, which Harold authored. If we have intensive tillage, insufficient added residues, low diversity, no surface cover, that basically means we're losing our soil organic matter, we get more erosion, we compact our subsoils, our aggregates fall apart because we're not feeding those elephants, as was so nicely said earlier on. The surface becomes compacted, crusts form, that means infiltration decreases. That picture of that flooding before, a lot of the flooding that's happening across the United States, you know, there were arguments when hurricanes hit Vermont and we got crazy flooding, that if only that soil was able to take in that water, those issues might have not been so bad. Infiltration decreases, we get more erosion of wind and water. We lose even more of our soil organic matter, even more of that topsoil and our nutrients, contributing to those water quality issues. We lose our topsoil, it's the best part. And we basically get a whole bunch of different issues, more ponding and persistent wetness when we have too much rain. But on the flip side of that, we have less water availability during our droughty events. We need to get that water into the soil. We get less rooting because the roots are stressed, lower nutrient access, less diversity of soil organisms, more disease. All of these are symptoms of our degraded soil health. Now, in the U.S., we mostly see crop yield declines, or sometimes we see that producers are telling us we have to put on more and more and more inputs, more irrigation water, more pesticides, more nutrients, just to keep at the same yield. We can't sustain that. In other parts of the world where we're not so lucky, where those folks don't have access to all those inputs, what ends up happening is hunger and malnutrition. And I've seen that. I spent some time in Kenya, I spent some time in Madagascar, and these folks are very much influenced by the soil that they are managing that's supposed to keep them alive. We basically have a downward spiral to poor soil health. This is what's happening. It's kind of like being caffeine addicted. You drink more caffeine, you just can't stay awake, so you drink some more caffeine, it doesn't end up helping us. Well, you know, our soils are kind of like that. As we till them more, they get addicted to that tillage. Every time the cycle goes around, we get a bit more compaction, a bit less biological activity, and that means, by and large, farmers will increase their tillage because, gosh, you got to get back in and loosen it up a bit again. How do we get out of this? Well, a lot of the answers we're finding are that biology is what drives the system. Our biological organisms are what build those aggregates. We have challenges with soils that look like this. We have opportunities. These are both box and silt loams. Here's a conventional operation that is only putting in fertilizers, no compost, no cover crops, lots of tillage. Here's a mixed operation with lots of organic inputs. This is the same soil type, same land capability class, but management is what's driving this difference. Here's a much better functioning soil. And by the way, I'd add that here, a standard soil test of pH and nutrients was showing that this was the better soil because there were more chemical issues here. pH was a little too low, some of the nutrients were a little too low. Biologically and physically, the soil is functioning better. We need to provide that kind of information to our producers so that they have that information so that they can manage it. So we've been working on that. So we have a lot of win-win opportunities. You know, all of these terrible challenges that we have may sound depressing, but the exciting thing is that if we help our producers manage their soils for better soil health, we can actually manage to feed ourselves, to improve our profits, and to improve the environment at the same time. For a long time in history, we have pitted agriculture against the environment. A lot of the time, the talk is, gosh, you can't get productivity and also get environmental benefits. But I would argue if we do things right, if our producers are managing for the whole system of healthy soils, those crops are going to take up those nutrients. They don't have to end up in our water. We can manage the system for lower greenhouse gas emissions. We can manage the system to maintain a good water balance. We can get a lot of benefit. We can't make it rain, but we can certainly infiltrate the water that falls on that soil and save it in the root zone. We can expand that root zone, like Harold just talked about, with a deeper root zone and the benefits of that management translating all the way down into the soil. We need to help our producers manage their systems to enable that. So here's just a list, probably not a comprehensive list, of all the benefits that we can get if we invest in the health of our nation's soils. Better nutrient cycling, better pest suppression, carbon sequestration and energy savings, water infiltration, less runoff, erosion, flooding, better water storage and availability, better water quality. Greenhouse gas emissions can be reduced. We can improve the resilience of our systems. Basically, we can move toward a system where we have long-term economic viability and sustained reliable productivity to actually feed those 9 million, but keep our environment intact. I think we have those possibilities, and we can see when farmers manage differently that we can get some of those differences. This right here is a long-term research study in northern New York, and after Hurricane Irene, the no-till plots were mostly left standing. The plow-till plots were mostly blown over and basically a crop loss. These are the kinds of impacts we can have, and we can't plan on this in an experiment. It was just lucky that Dan went up there just at the right time to see this after this hurricane. These are the kinds of events that we're seeing all over the United States. There are producers that report that their neighbors' crop failed while when they have been practicing no-till and cover crops, their crop actually made it through and got reasonable yield. Right here, no-till field next to a conventional till field, side by side, after a heavy rainfall, water infiltrated just fine. Probably could have driven on this field a day or two later. Not so much right here. Cover crop, no cover crop. Look at the water quality just visibly coming off this field. A lot more infiltration can happen when you have good continuous pores that are built over time. From the CTIC survey of cover cropping, in 2012, in drought states, with cover crops, yields in both corn and soybean were higher than farmers who had not been using cover crops because that water was able to infiltrate and be stored. We're seeing these kinds of results. We know that that can be successful. But how do we help our producers see that? Well, the processes in a healthy soil have to be working optimally. We've just heard a lot about the physical, chemical, and biological all being a system. We need all those processes to work as a system so that we can arrive at these benefits. And that means, as multiple speakers have talked about, that we need to feed that underground livestock, those two elephants and an acre of soil. You know, we need to feed all these organisms so that they can build that house, build that aggregation, build that pore space so that we can get good air flow into the soil. We can get that water draining but being stored. So the NRCS put together four principles of soil health management. And I would argue that these are really good principles. These are principles that if we figure out how to apply them well across the United States, we'll make a lot of progress. I think they kind of hold true everywhere. You know, minimizing soil disturbance doesn't necessarily mean you need to go to no-till. That may not be possible in all systems, but how can you minimize disturbance to the soil? Maximizing diversity, whether that's diversity of plants, of animals, of microbes, what can we diversify in our systems? How can we keep the soil covered better? How can we maximize living roots for more of the year? A lot of what this is driving at is feeding that underground livestock, feeding our microbes so that they can keep our soil functioning. But it's going to be tricky because adapting these principles to all of our diverse systems, small vegetable farm in the Northeast, 300,000 acres of rangeland in Wyoming, vegetable farms on 100 or 200 or 1,000 acres in California that grow three, four crops in a row. How do we adjust? How do we make these principles work economically and environmentally for all of these producers? Those are some big challenges that we're facing. But ultimately, what we need to do is reverse that spiral. We need to reinvigorate the biological activity so that we can build that soil again. Jerry Hatfield talks about a stairmaster. It's going to take some work. We got to climb that stairmaster. We got to build things back up, reduce tillage, increase biomass that goes into the soil, get more rooting, higher diversity, surface cover. That means we increase our organic matter. We reduce compaction from rooting. We decrease erosion. We rebuild those aggregates, we increase available water holding capacity, that means we produce more biomass during drought, we get more infiltration, that means we can store more of that water, we get less erosion by wind and water, more organic matter is able to build, because again, we're building that biomass, both below ground and above ground, that's a feedback, but the other direction, a positive feedback there. We can keep our nutrients in the system. We can build our topsoil. We use less energy. We need less tillage. We can store more water. We can get better rooting. That means we use more of those nutrients instead of losing them. Greater soil organism diversity. We're building that soil even more. We get less disease pressure because that organismal community is much more balanced. Field conditions are more resilient. That means we can actually deal with those events, those heavy rainfall events, those droughts. We can get more consistency. We can increase our crop yields. We can lower our costs. We can lower our risks. We can get those environmental benefits. This is possible. We can do this, but it's going to take a lot of work, and it's not going to take one agency or one organization. It's going to take all of us working together, all of us getting on the same page, pulling all the different perspectives that are diverse and sometimes not agreeing, but pulling them all together, because that way we have fewer blind spots. You know, we need to see it all. We need to consider it all and drive toward that. Here are some of the geographically specific management challenges, just a small subset, just to give you an idea. A lot of the time, it's, gosh, my climate is too wet, it's too cold, it's too dry, it's too hot, I can't do any of this stuff, or all of the above, right? In Kansas, the question is, gosh, you know, we go from 16 inches of rainfall on the western side of Kansas to 44 inches on the eastern side. Do we have enough water for a cover crop? Can we even manage to grow one? In Vermont, is there enough of a growing season to grow a cover crop at all to even get it established? In Florida, gosh, if I get a cover crop established, it's just going to decompose right away. You know, is it going to still be there? Is it going to suppress weeds? New York, further north you go, will the soils be too wet or too cold in the spring, especially if I go to no-till, if I have a cover crop mat that's on top of that soil? California, how do I economically justify a cover crop when I could be growing lettuce or spinach or strawberries? Wyoming, what kind of management effort is actually economically worthwhile when from one season to the next, the climate variability that's just inherent to that system controls so much of how the soil functions? We could be losing organic matter one year in a drought and regaining a little bit when we get a little more rain another year. These are the kinds of challenges that we're going to need to work with. And that's going to be difficult, but I think there's a lot of opportunities to geographically, in specific ways, target these kinds of issues and figure out ways that will actually work for better soil management. How do we get there? I think there's some key pieces. Producers and service providers, not just NRCS, but our technical service providers, our certified crop consultants, our industry specialists, everybody needs to understand the basic processes of biological and physical soil functioning, not just the chemical. We need to have ways to assess current soil health status so that we know what those constraints are. Are we working with a tillage-addicted system? What specifically is constrained, and what is it that we need to do first to invest in getting out of those constraints and then rebuild and maintain better soil health? We need to help our producers develop appropriate plans, no matter where they are, no matter what their production system is, no matter how willing they are to change or not. Some producers are willing to change their whole production system around. Some producers say, well, give me one simple thing I can start with, but I'm pretty risk averse. We need to work with all those producers. We need to find the people that can reach those producers to help them put in place a plan that will work for them in their system. And as things get implemented, I know we won't do everything right away, because there's still a lot of research to be done. There's a lot of work. These societies are promoting a lot of that work. We come together to learn from each other. We really need to get that integrated. We need to observe what's happening on farms and on research farms, and then integrate that back into what we're doing so that we can have bigger impact. And like some folks already said, you know, the economic piece is a really important one. You know, to get adoption across the United States as the mainstream thing, we're going to need to show those economic numbers. How are we going to do that? Well, there's a lot of collaborations on their way, and we'll get there, but it might take a bit of time. So a year ago, I joined the NRCS to build this new NRCS Soil Health Division. And I just wanted to show you where we're at with that right now. I think there's a lot of opportunities for collaboration. I'm really hoping that people from all across the U.S. will reach out to their specialists, to their regional leaders on the ground. We're going to be working on soil health training advanced training. How do we actually get to those agricultural service providers? How do we help them bring themselves up to speed with really understanding those processes and being able to service their producers to manage their health? We're working with partners on soil health assessment. So assessments like the Cornell assessment that I collaborated with a big group on, SMAF, that we can get further integrated into those kinds of publicly available assessments. You know, looking at all the various indicators that are being measured right now, both publicly available and some that are not in the public realm yet, is there something more that we can tap into? Or do we have what it needs? You know, can we start with what we have and then keep improving on these soil health assessments? But we need to have something standardized so that producers can compare to each other, to the established research. And we need to know what it is we're looking at, what it is we're measuring, what kinds of constraints we all need to know about, and how to interpret that. You know, aggregate stability of 30%, what does that mean in California, in Wyoming, in northern Maine, in southern Florida? You know, so using a framework like SMAF, using a framework like what we developed at Cornell, making it publicly available is going to be really critical. And so we're working with partners on that component. Soil health management planning. Planning is one of the things that the NRCS does the best. Conservation planning is kind of the history since the 30s that the agency has provided that technical assistance, somebody going to the producer, helping them assess their resource base, assess what their current constraints are, and develop a plan moving forward. Soil health management planning is sort of the next step in that. So NRCS, one of the things that as the division we'll be working on is to make that available to our producers out of NRCS, along with cost-shared soil health assessments. So we're working on that. We're just starting to get into how we can implement that, but I think that we'll get that happening over the coming years, both in EQIP, in the CSP program, in other programs. We're moving in that direction. And of course, the ultimate most important piece is soil health management systems implementation. I would love to see over the next decade us getting to a point where most of our producers have some kind of soil health management system in place. And obviously NRCS can't do that alone. We have to all of us work together on that. And so I keep saying to all audiences I speak to, you know, we really need to work together, make sure to reach out, make sure to help us observe what's going on and adapt all of our programs. There's going to be things we don't do right away, and so we're going to be building feedback mechanisms into everything that the division does, everything that we do as NRCS, so that when there are issues on the ground, when there are new ideas, when there are new opportunities, we can take that feedback and roll it back into programs so that we can hopefully make a bigger and bigger difference. Some key components, you know, leveraging partners is going to be huge for this. Ensuring the scientific basis of everything we get on the ground. Continuing to keep in touch with the research community. There's an opportunity here. All of those of you who apply for grants and somewhere in the reporting, you need to show impact. You need to show that what you're doing is reaching producers, that what you're doing is making a difference on the ground. Well, NRCS can help do that. You know, if you have new management techniques that work in particular parts of the country, in particular systems, we want to know about it because we may have an opportunity to write that into our programs to make sure that it's getting used across the country or in the particular region where it is useful. Evaluating the economics, continuing to quantify the benefits, those are all important components. Thank you. So here's what that division looks like. I'm the only person based in D.C. That's so that there is that direct communication. I can communicate with leadership. I can make sure that messages get rolled up. But all the rest of these folks are based across the country. We've got a few of them in the audience. We have Dr. Diane Stott, I think, somewhere. Oh, maybe we don't have her. I saw her before. We have Dr. Jennifer Moore-Corsera, who is almost fully on board. We've got her in the audience here. So excited to have some folks here at these meetings. Reach out to them, reach out to me, reach out to folks in the states that have been hired. We've got a diverse set of skills across this division. You know, we've really tried to hire people from diverse backgrounds, people from diverse locations with diverse experience, so that there'll be somebody there who can talk to each audience. There'll be somebody there who can interact well with all the different perspectives that we need to include here. So we've got folks that have a lot of background in soil health management planning and implementation, in soil health assessment. We've got people who have been farmers and ranchers, equipment use and modification as part of what they've done. We've got other folks that have done a lot of research. We've got folks that represent a whole bunch of different production systems across the United States. People with plant materials and cover crops background, various different kinds of educational backgrounds, leadership, management, coordination skills, teaching skills, research skills, industry, outreach, partnerships, all these kinds of things. So we've got a lot of diversity, and we'd love to leverage that with whoever else can collaborate with us. This is where people are based. So take a look at that. Take a look at where you are. It's not quite online yet, but we'll be working on that. Most of these folks just came on board in October. Finally, we're getting there. We're about 75% staffed now. Reach out to these folks. They're all getting to be in place. And, you know, we've got to kind of set it up so that we have primary coverage areas so that externally people know who to reach out to first. But we're going to leverage those skills across the country. So if somebody is needed that has a particular skill set that needs to be brought somewhere else in the country, we can do that. We're going to be trying to leverage all these different opportunities, trying to target all these different kinds of systems. 20 people, that's a tall order. Clearly we need collaboration, both within NRCS and with external partners. What will they do? Well, you know, looking at these four major goals, some key pieces, building and leveraging those partnerships. You know, those folks will be reaching out to their universities, reaching out to their ARS partners. Feel free to reach out to them as well. Assessing gaps, needs, and issues in those regions. What are the critical key issues there? Compiling, developing, providing advanced training, contributing to workshops that are being put on by other organizations. Facilitating the development and acquiring new technology. That means we're bringing technology into the NRCS, which means we need you all to reach out to us when you have a new technology, a new management practice, some new findings that really need to be paid attention to. Collaborating on national efforts, such as how can we get soil health assessment standardized? How can we get it cost shared? How can we get a soil health management planning approach put on the ground so that it's accessible by producers? Developing and revising our conservation practice standards and our enhancements so that they really promote soil health management systems implementation. It's a system. It's not a silver bullet approach. There's not one thing that we're going to be able to tell our producers. How do we create these systems? How do we make our programs facilitate that in the best way we can? Thank you. So there's a lot of ability for people to collaborate. I'm really hoping that folks will participate in all these different pieces of what we're doing. So just briefly, there'll be a lot more time to discuss. At 3 p.m. today in Auditorium 2, there will be refreshments. And after that, we'll hopefully have some discussion amongst various of the speakers that have been in the room today. A couple of things I would love to hear from you about is what are your insights and concerns considering standardization of indicators? We'll be trying to bring people together to really kind of look at methods, make sure that we can get something standardized across the U.S., sharing your successes, challenges, and lessons that you've learned in promoting practice adoption. How can we get farmers to adopt these practices? How can we roll that out and roll it out fast? Because let's face it, we don't have that much time. So with that, thank you very much, and I'd love to take questions if I have time.
Do you have any questions? Any questions out there? One back there.
Just an easy question, I realize, but is there a point when NRCS is going to finally can say to producers that annual crop production in the semi-arid west is terminally ill? You got to go back to perennial vegetation and grape? Or are you just going to keep trying to improve things a little bit? And I'm not convinced at all that
could you repeat that?
Okay, I will do my best to repeat that. The question is, the question part of it is, will NRCS say that no more annual production should be practiced in semi-arid lands? Well, you know, we're voluntary and incentive-based. So we're certainly not going to make any regulations or dictate to producers that they should do certain things or not, but we will provide practices, we will provide technical assistance to help producers become more sustainable. So I don't think that we're probably going to manage to economically get away from annual crop production in all of the semi-arid West. I don't know whether that's possible. I don't know.
Could you at least tell producers that this is probably not a sustainable system to keep annual crop production in these places? That's a difficult thing. Tell them that and get to that point.
That's a good question. Is it totally not sustainable, or is there a way that we can use little enough water that we're still recharging the groundwater, that we can disturb the soil less and use some of that water for some cover crops that maybe keep the soil covered enough that it turns more sustainable? I don't know. You know, it's a good question. I don't know that I can answer that certainly to your satisfaction, but integrating animals wherever that's possible is definitely something that there's more of that being promoted. Having more perennials in a rotation is definitely a better way to go, you know. So yeah, you know, the basic principles certainly suggest that if we can have more pastured forage that is perennial, that would be a good thing sustainability-wise. Maybe there are some other ways to get at those basic principles as well in our annual production, and I think a lot of those things will be coming at the local level.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much for that.